A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Rachel Shackleton.
Hello.
I sort of hesitated for a bit because I thought you were going to leap in. We did lots of fake mock ones before we started the actual recording. You never know. But yes, I've got you guys here today because I thought we would do a sort of general conversation on the generation as it was and the generation we're going to be going into. And we don't have specific dates for the PS5 or the next box, or whatever the hell they're going to call
next
it.
Next box.
I wrote down next box with a big capital X and I thought it looked all right, but I'm also getting ill, so I don't know. But I wrote that down. I know, not yet.
Oh, mate.
Not fully ill. But so, yeah, we don't know the specifics of when they're coming next year, but the new systems will start to drop next year. There'll be all sorts of best games, best levels, best whatever of the generation of the decade and everything else. So I just thought we'd have a nice conversation about the generation to come. As a broad opening question, what do you guys kind of want from the next generation of consoles? We'll break all this stuff down, but when someone says the next generation of systems, what kind of comes to mind?
I feel like what I expect is just like a load of graphical overhauls and like loads of like everything just being made better than it is. But I would like something a bit more innovative, something new, something exciting maybe. But I actually don't know. I don't have any idea what that could be or what I want. I know what I'm expecting is loads of upgraded components. I know what I want is something that's a little more exciting than that. But I feel like everything is just the next like PS4 Pro or Xbox.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know if you guys have the same feel where it's like the graphics have gotten better and better and better like so much. And I remember the jump between the PS1 to the PS2 and be like, oh my God, like something like Tekken Tag Tournament or whatever just looked amazing. And the leap between the PS3 to the PS4 wasn't like as much. Like, and at this point, I'm like, how much more realistic can you get other than skin textures or something? But I don't know if it's the same way with you guys.
I think for me, it's less about graphical improvements because, like you're saying, like there's only so much we can go up from 1080p and still sort of keep it affordable for people. For me, I'd like to see improvements to performance, frame rate for games. Just seems all over the place lately. I don't care if it's 720p. I just want it to not stutter.
Yeah.
Also, one big improvement I think I hope we will get with the new generation of consoles is size of games and the amount of time it takes to sort of install them. Because, I mean, look at heckin' Red Dead, for example. That was like 100 90. Gigabytes.
Yeah.
So hopefully something they do going forward is work out a way. Ash Millman.
Every time.
Ladies and gentlemen. is look at a way of optimizing that for the new console that means that it doesn't need to take up so much bloody room.
Yeah, they really seem to miss that the first time. Like, they sort of get the assumption as to how much space we were going to need, like, completely wrong. I think the average file size for a game is, like, 30 to 40 gig.
Yeah.
And most of the systems, like, the base version is just way too small.
It's 500 gigabytes, and then a chunk of that is with the, like, sort of
the OS always takes it up, I mean, with the Switch as well, like, that thing's internal memory was, like, 28 gig, and it's, like, even something like Breath of the Wild, if you just downloaded it, you had to buy an extra SD card to even make it fit. So I guess in terms of like, that's another sort of thing is like, do we think that there's a need for new hardware? I guess in terms of like storage space, I would totally say yes. And some of the rumors they've talked about, the PS5 apparently has an SSD drive, which I don't know my PC
that'll
stuff.
Really, really help with speed of sort of load up times and that sort of
thing. I think
stuff,
me and Arshel,
to the drive as well.
Okay, we're both like console peasants. What's an SSD drive?
So it's a solid state. It's a solid state drive as opposed to a normal hard disk drive. So what it is it's just a lot faster, basically. Like I said, reading and writing to the drive will be a lot faster. So starting up a game, saving a game, you know, loading a save file, that's all going to be a lot faster on
good.
An SSD.
Because the thing that they, Phil Spencer talks about this for the next Xbox and said that one thing that he noticed this generation was like frame rates and performance and the idea that the systems would have like, you know, like pause and resume functions, but you're still waiting for stuff to boot up. So like, if they can make it as instant as like the Switch, then that could be like a really good way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like, I guess like, yeah, if it was like an opening question as to, you know, do we feel like we need new hardware? Like, Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like it's time for a new system, but like again, I don't know how much better we can get like with, mm-hmm. with all the component stuff. To be fair, size was something I hadn't even thought about. You mentioning that, it's like, oh my god, yes, we do need something that can handle size better, can install it faster. Because when you're taking like 3 days to download and install something,
it's like every blue moon when I decide to boot up my Xbox, I can't play anything.
Yeah, right.
Like chances are it's got an update or it's got this or that, or I've uninstalled it because it's only 500 gigabytes. Like, well, it's a terabyte actually, but never mind. You get the idea.
You got there over time though. Like, I mean, that's the thing. I ended up getting a PS4 Pro because I bought into Josh Brown's hype and I bought a 4K TV and a PS4 Pro. And I'm not going to lie, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
But one of the things on the Pro side was that you at least get double the space. Mm. So at least you could sort of install everything, because I was doing that thing where I was deleting something, installing something, deleting something, and it was just going round and round. But yeah, I think in terms of like stuff that, like for me, it feels like the next generation is going to be one of like refinement.
Mm.
Like you would get like the bigger storage space sizes and everything, and like different boot up things, like things, ways that you can play games faster. I think the Switch sort of demonstrated that really well.
I think a generation of refinement is exactly the precisely what I'm trying to get at here. I think you've like summed that up really nicely. It's like, it's not necessarily we need something new, we need new technology, there's something like really innovative and crazy that's going to come around the corner and blow our minds, which would be really nice, but it's not going to happen. It's just more of the same, getting better and more improved, bit more room, bit more speed, bit more that, bit more the other. And that's, I feel like it's going to be the point where we don't need consoles anymore, like we just need one thing. Like, but that's where the industry's headed. Could this be our last one?
Yeah, totally.
Potentially.
Yeah. As like a side thing as well, in terms of like pause and resume stuff, do you guys tend to do the pause and resume stuff on your Xbox or your PS4? I used to always be scared of it because I thought it was like a big electricity risk.
What you mean like rest mode on a PS4?
Yeah, like because they patched them in. Like the PS4 was meant to have it at launch, it got it later on. The Xbox has it where you can put them in the, it's in like, you take it out of its energy saving mode, and then when you turn it off, it'll boot back up immediately, like
the
Switch
Xbox
does.
Oh, the Xbox has that. It's got like a fast boot up.
Yeah, yeah. Like, do you guys tend to use that stuff?
Don't. The only time I'll ever use rest mode is when I'm downloading a game, because games download faster in rest mode. But it's it uses a huge amount of electricity in a world where I need money to buy more video games. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be paying that electricity.
So. I was always thinking it was just going to burn everything to the ground.
I grew up on the whole, the standby button uses electricity, turn everything off at the plugs. Like everything is always like fully off. Like not the TV, not anything. All red lights off. Mm-hmm. Don't like it. It like freaks me out thinking of anything being left on. But also, yeah, you don't need it that instantaneously.
Like. See, sometimes I've accidentally realized that I've put it in the other mode, like with the Xbox thing, I've changed it, or with the PS4, I've changed it, and then I've only gone back the next day, and then you do realize like it is good just getting your game like back straight away. Mm. So like if they can kind of pull that off, I don't know. It's just something to be like an open question for the comments or people that can get in touch on social media and stuff, because I don't know if the vast majority of people do this.
I've just had a thought there.
Go on.
I think I've maybe switched my Nintendo Switch off. Literally a handful of times.
If we're talking literally, I think I've literally turned it off once.
Always put on standby. Yeah, same. I just realised that right there. Oh crap.
The way that they like built that though was like they use the Tegra processors, the mobile, like it's like a mobile phone, and it's like, when do you like really turn your phone off unless it's like an update?
Oh, never.
And so yeah, so it's like kind of the same mentality, but at the same time that battery's going to burn out, and I think that's something that they need to kind of go with going forward.
Well, I don't know, I feel like it's different because your phone is like connected all the time to everything around you. Like we wouldn't be able to exist in modern society without phones in the capacity that we have them now. Whereas games, it's like that's your like in and out like of a different world. Like, I don't need to go. Whoa, okay, like I'm back in. Like,
see,
hook me up.
You haven't got? Did you haven't got a Switch yet?
It works for the Switch.
That's what
took
me on more.
That's fair. That's fair. I feel like portable's
not
different.
Not for console though. Absolutely.
That's another thing. Yeah, and plus like being home console, obviously it's plugged into the mains. You don't need to worry about batteries, and there is kind of that thing. But the idea of like an instant access console, I like the idea of that. But
yeah,
there is like the,
we don't need it on a TV, do we?
No. I like the idea, but I think it depends how it's done in terms of like the power side of it and making me not worry for a burned out house.
Yeah,
depends how it's done. So I was going to run down some innovations from this generation and just sort of like see what we sort of think about them and whether they should be carried forward. Maybe they've already been and gone, or whether they can have some improvements in the future. The first one is motion controls, because I feel like after the Wii blew up, we saw like the Kinect come in. Microsoft tried that with the Xbox. This generation, massive catastrophic failure, and they stripped the Kinect back out of it, and we've kind of had this weird Xbox dashboard until very recently, where they've actually overhauled it again. And then obviously with the PlayStation side, they had the PlayStation Move, which went away, but they kept the Move controllers for VR. Now, I'll get to VR in a bit, but what do you guys think of motion controls? Was it ever good?
Oh, no. No, it's never been good. I know I'm talking to, like, Nintendo, like, fangirl number one here as well as the thing. Like
motion controls representative.
Yeah, I hate them. If I want to play a game, I want to sit there. I want to be, like, in my sofa, like, melded to it with my snacks and drink that I can get to at any point and just sitting very still, pressing buttons. Like, I'm all thumbs. Like, I'm all thumbs when it comes to games. Like, I don't like moving. doing. I think it's a neat idea, mm-hmm. but it's a gimmick and a novelty. It's yes. not like conducive to proper like actual gaming because you just get tired as well.
You can't. I mean, I remember asking one of my friends who bought a Wii back in the day, and I was like, "Is there a way to play these games without having to get up and run around the room?" And he was like, "Mate, there's a fine art to it."
Yeah.
And it was like that thing of like realizing that you could play
sitting on your couch going,
"Yeah, literally." Because like once you kind of realize like what parts of that gyroscope it's tracking, you can sort of do a lot of the stuff sitting down.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, I would play stuff.
Rules just take the rules straight out of it, though, doesn't it? That make the whole. If the whole point is you're sitting there going, "How can I make this easier?" Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to run around the room. Just get a controller. Just True. Get a controller.
I don't know what kind of games you've been playing that require you to run around the room. Just Dance.
Yeah. Just Wii Fit over and over again. Say, yeah, what is this game?
Not like all of them are like crazy over the top. Yeah, it's like no. sometimes you have to wag stuff.
But. Motion controls have really come a long way since mm-hmm. the Kinect, obviously. The Kinect sort of morphed into being what we now know as like the Vive, mm-hmm. for example. But as far as like the Wiimote now evolving into the Joy-Con are like massively sophisticated mm-hmm. as far as motion controls mm-hmm. go, and they don't work for every game. Mm-hmm. The likes of them working, for example, like a bow in Skyrim or in, I think you can use that for Breath of the Wild, can't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You can turn it off and on, which is a big plus as mm-hmm. well. It's always like an option. Mm. Splatoon 2 is the peak, although not the Ash Millman version of peak, because apparently that means the worst.
Peak can also be a trough.
No, man. If something is peak, it's bad. If something is the peak.
The peak, right.
Okay,
Splatoon
right.
good.
This is hard.
The peak of motion controls being not only like super duper fun, but also like making the game a lot better, like, a lot easier.
Because that's the thing with Nintendo, like the Switch is one of the only systems these days that still has, or like, you know, the last couple of years that still maintains motion controls. And some games like have them patched in, something like World of Goo, you can point like a cursor, like Wii style. World of Goo is really good. World of Good. And so like, yeah, hardly any sort of games still do that. But Nintendo's about to release the Ring Fitness thing, which I can't wait for, with this big...
I'm interested in that. Like,
it looks so good.
Someone who hates motion control. That's, I'm like, what the hell is this?
You
like,
see it, you know.
Yeah, I'm like, I want to try it. Like, I just think, I like the idea of doing a fantasy, like, I like that they're advertising it as exercise with a fantasy game involved.
Yes, that was the thing that kind of got me in. I like the idea of, because it's turn-based combat. I can't think what exactly the name of this thing. I think it's called the Ring Fit
Adventure.
Ring Fit Adventure. And it's kind of like a turn-based action-adventure type thing, but you're fighting a giant bodybuilding demon, and you do turn-based combat at one point where you have to like do like crunches to power up your fireballs. I'm game for all that stuff. But I think overall Nintendo are one of the only companies like in the current climate that are still bothering with motion integration at all.
Yeah,
they also do it better than anybody else though. So what do you think going forward?
I think it's a novelty and a gimmick that will die out. And I think if you're not doing it in VR or with like some sort of visual world that ties into that, it's pointless and I don't like it. Ring Fit is funny. Ring Fit's funny. That's why I want to look at that. Because it's a bodybuilding demon and it's advertised as exercise, so I feel like that's a bit different. But I feel like motion controls in games, good for party games maybe. I think that sort of thing where you're goofing around with your friends. Like remember iToy on the PlayStation 2?
I used to love iToy.
iToy.
Hell yeah, exactly. You did.
iToy was good because it was a gimmicky party game sort of thing that you can
when
crack
I'm cleaning
out.
Cleaning windows.
I was literally about to say that. I remember a game where you cleaned windows.
Yeah. It was an amazing time. But yeah, Rach, what do you think in terms of motion controls?
I agree with Ash, actually. Motion controls have a time and a place, absolutely. Mm. It just so happens that I have found that time and place, and it is Splatoon, and it is game where you do get to like aim your bow and your hook shot and stuff, and oh my god,
It's weird though, like because the thing with in Splatoon's case, like it maps the motion controls to even the pro controller, and you're aiming by like moving it in full 360 space, which means you can aim more precisely than with sticks.
Splatoon 2 is better with motion controls.
Yeah, Splatoon 2 kind of became like the test case for like if you're a doubter or whatever, play Splatoon 2 that way, and you'll get what it offers in a way that analog sticks don't. But like I said, with only Nintendo kind of doing it, it would be on Sony or Microsoft to do some sort of maybe motion controls integration thing to prove that it could work more.
Yeah.
Next thing down is VR, which we sort of touched on a little bit with the motion control stuff. But either of you guys tried VR?
Yeah.
I have a VR. I have two VRs.
Good. How did you find VR? Because I initially was really skeptical. I thought it was quite gimmicky. And then I ended up getting a PSVR and I played more stuff.
Yeah.
You were doing a banter face.
No, just because, again, my whole experience of VR and motion controls party games, like that's how I played them. VR's really fun when you're in a group of people, you'll pass your helmet around. Like you play that game where you don't know who has the bomb and this, that, and the other.
Keep talking and nobody explodes.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of thing like where you're just having fun with it. And I think that's really good. I think VR could be the future of our gaming if we learn how to utilize it properly, because at the moment it just makes me feel a bit sick. It gives me a migraine if I play it too long.
Yeah, you need to get used to it.
Yeah, so I can't play it like on my own. But I think again, as a party game, great gimmick, great novelty, but that one has a bit more potential to grow because it's so immersive. Like it's like stepping into a world like with fantasy and sci-fi and all that sort of thing, where it's all about the integration of you into this new world. I think that VR has a very unique viewpoint of that. And if they can tap into actually selling that properly and having it as an enjoyable like experience that doesn't give you a migraine, then that would be good.
Is it because you got PSVR, Rich, and then what was your other one? Was it Oculus?
I have an Oculus, yeah.
How have you found them?
Is
it the revolution?
Use them all the time.
I have used them once.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice time?
I had a lovely time. I played through Resi 7 is one of my favorite horror games of all time. I'd never played it in VR, so I literally got the PSVR to play Resi 7 in VR.
Hey, I got it to play No Man's Sky. So.
And you aim the gun with your flipping face, and it's flipping awesome. But the thing is, I don't have a lot of free time, and it takes a lot of energy, a lot of like mental state to say I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna play with my VR today, and it just hasn't happened for me since.
I think the setup's a weird one, like, because you do have to, I mean, this is like
a million cables and stuff.
Which like I like that the Oculus Quest is the first like just completely wireless
that was
VR.
What I was gonna say, I think the future of VR, if it ever wants to be successful, they need to get wireless out to the mainstream like at an affordable price.
I think the PS5 will launch with like a, well, maybe not launch, but will almost be in tandem with the PSVR too. I think it'll be a wireless thing you just put on.
I think there's something to be said, maybe not for VR, but that sort of technology being implemented with like AR and with
AR's what I've got next.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but keep going.
There we go. But like 3D and that sort of thing. I think that's another way that, like, again, it's gimmicky and novelty and that sort of thing. But if you use it in an immersive way that is subtle and isn't like too overwhelming and overbearing, then I think that's a really good way of furthering the medium as it is. AR, I think, is a good one because it's like you'll still have everything in your game, but maybe there'll be like something. Oh, I just stroked the microphone, sorry. Maybe there'll be like something like next to you or like coming out of the screen, which would be an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. My thing with VR, like, because I say I got it for No Man's Sky because I'm insane, but I needed to play that game in VR, and I like the stuff that is the most immersive stuff possible, where you can literally completely forget about the world around you, which freaks me out because I'm always like, someone could break into my house and be standing right next to me. But whatever. Something like No Man's Sky, where it's a fully immersive survival game and you're trying to just survive on planets or jetting from place to place, or Resident Evil 7 works really well too.
Oh, boy.
But it's like the way that VR kind of gets talked about is that, like, it's still kind of, it's almost still in gimmick territory, even though sometimes when you get a really good VR game, it does affect you in a way that no other game does, because you are in full 3D space. And for me, playing like Super Hot was fantastic in VR as well.
Oh, I still need to do that.
Yeah, I totally recommend that. And it's like, if you're looking at ways that the industry moved itself forward, VR is one of the only like fundamental ways that we can control something differently that we couldn't do before. In terms of going forward though, like I'm still yet to be like fully convinced that it's a mainstream thing.
Well, I wouldn't invest in a VR myself, but I enjoy it around other people's houses and doing all that sort of thing. Like, and I've tried it out on proper games and everything and had a proper go on it, but I don't think I'd ever actually get one myself yet. But I feel like once the industry's grown that way a bit more, it's something that I would definitely be interested in. Whereas motion control, I'm just like, get lost.
And what do you think would bring you back, Rach? Because you've kind of gone close, but not, you're not like a hardcore VR person.
Oh, just getting married and actually having free time.
Settling down with the VR.
Yeah, I've got a lot of games that are on the list. I really want to play that Falcon game.
Falcon Age is great.
Fist a bird, and I'm totally there. For
you can hold your arm out, it lands on your arm, and you feed it stuff with your other hand.
I don't even know anything about
my god,
other than just that little trailer.
I will totally say that if you want to play Falcon Age, if you like the idea of that, you can play it without VR. It was part of Sony's VR showcase, but you can totally play it without it.
We're talking about me playing VR though.
No, totally, it works both ways. If you want to feed a little Falcon with your hands, you can.
I do.
It's a good time. Also, yeah, you mentioned augmented reality. I had down Pokemon Go, Minecraft Earth, Dragon Quest Walk, like these games that are. Pokemon Go is the biggest one by far.
Did you play Pokemon Go with the AR on?
No.
Me
neither. It kind of made it worse with the AR on. Like I remember initially going, oh my god, there's Magikarps in the river. And oh, there's a thing in the grass.
But that's because it had issues with battery life. It would just drain the battery when the AR was on, so everyone just needed to turn it off.
True. But the thing is, like, now they've obviously done so many patches and like new content updates and whatever.
It's too little too late, mate.
Oh no, it's not. Rage, it's so good. That game now, that game's photo mode is brilliant. Like,
that's true.
Yeah. You like, because you unleashed a Charizard in our kitchen,
did.
And then
it
you
was
like
flying about
because it maps it to the proper size, and you're trying to get the angle on it to take a photo. I think they've done a lot with Pokemon Go and things like that. Like I said, the photo mode is the thing that made me go like, oh man, there's so much more you can do with a game, well, an app knowing where what 3D space is, like relative to you. Like you can place a Pokemon down and walk away from it and take like a distance shot and it'll look like a Pokemon's in space or whatever. And then with the Minecraft one, you know, you're digging into like the pavement, quote unquote.
Is this
build
Minecraft
stuff.
Earth?
Minecraft Earth, yeah.
Earth, yeah.
And that thing's like about to go into like full open beta, but there's been early access to, for it as well.
This has the potential to be huge, and I've heard nothing about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they haven't. I think it's because they're waiting for it to be like a full trailer, and oh, you can go play it now and stuff like that. But I like the idea of augmented reality more than virtual. I think it's easier to leap into.
I like augmented reality. I really enjoyed Pokemon Go. I like games where you can have like a little thing. I mean, it's good for pictures. It's good for good wholesome fun. Dance. Also, you get great memes out of it, like with Kermit the Frog doing the dance. That's my favorite little augmented.
You've been doing that all morning. I don't know what. Do you know what that is?
I don't know what that is. Want to look uncool, so it's what it was.
Just pretend it's all okay.
Look, you can get Kermit and insert him into videos doing a dance, and it's like augmented reality. It's like when you turn around and see Pikachu on your phone, it's like Kermit's there dancing.
Because I had
like on Snapchat, like
stop doing the thing. When with Pikachu on Pokemon Go, I had like had him on my couch, and if I went and you tap on him, he does like a little happy face. So I did like a thumbs up, tapped it, happy face, took a photo, best photo I've ever taken.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's potential for AR to be a lot. The thing is though, like trying to blend AR stuff with console tech, like Nintendo Switch with like Pokemon Let's Go, they're one of the only games that integrated the two, where you could swap a Pokemon into your Pokemon Go account and then go and take it out with you. You know, there are lots of like fan accounts that are like me and my best friend Pikachu, and it's them sitting in a park with them or whatever. It kind of like if we were kids going through this now, I think we'd actually be trying to live the Pokemon trainer life, taking our Pokemon out and about and then putting them back into games.
Don't know what you're talking about, kids, man. I'm
not saying it's gonna get in the way, but
Pokemon Go, I feel like I had a lot of time on Pokemon Go, and I'm ready for like the next thing.
Yeah.
Although they tried that with Harry Potter and it was just
Is that not because we're not Harry Potter nerds though?
Maybe it's because Pokemon's better.
Even then though, it is better. But sorry, Harry Potter nerds. But even Rich though, the world's biggest Harry Potter fan, didn't take to it.
I don't know. I the bit that I tried a bit was dry. It was dry. It wasn't that good.
It's like a tutorial that lasts for about 10 minutes.
Everything takes so long in it, I think. Whereas with Pokemon Go, I feel like it's quite like instantly gratifying. Yeah. Like you catch a Pokemon, that's it. It's a new thing. You can walk around a bit more. The Harry Potter one was like it's like a 10-second like I'm casting a spell.
I did like the idea that certain, like, because I like the idea that a lot of augmented reality apps will use Google Maps data to pull in different landmarks and
that
tell you
cool.
where things are going to happen. And I like that because in Pokemon Go they have it where Team Rocket have taken over certain landmarks and you go and fight them and stuff. That's a really cool idea. In Harry Potter they had it so that like certain houses would take up different, you have to go and battle them.
Yeah.
And like my park down the street turned into like a battle between like Slytherin and Hufflepuff or whatever. Yeah. And I had to go down and defend my team. I like that stuff. One of the next things down is just the difference between physical games and digital. I think this generation digital really took off. But what do you guys tend to buy out of the two? Do you still stick with physical or digital?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements. Featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware. Weather-ready teak. And quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I try to stick to physical as much as possible. If I know there's a game that I want, I'll go out and buy it, or and then I'll do trade-ins and stuff. Like, I'm a big fan of CEX and trade-ins. I love trade-ins. but if it's just something I'm like, oh, I want to play this right now, then I'll download it, which is like the odd occasion. Like, so I'd say it's actually like 50-50, to be honest. Like, okay. But then I feel like with the advent of Games Pass, my whole thing has shifted digital, which I wasn't expecting. Like, I didn't think I'd be a big digital person.
I used to always be like physical only. I want a collection. If I'm putting money into it, I want a physical collection that I can see. I don't just want tiles on a screen. And I've changed in terms of the immediacy of it. Like, I like being able to just click on a thing and download it. But it clashes against the file sizes that you mentioned earlier, because if you just have I just want to play this thing, you're not going to for another 2-3 hours or like maybe later that day. Rachel, your spending habits changed?
I'm the same. I was like diehard physical. If you'd asked me the same question a year ago, I would have said no, I'd like only buy physical. But I have recently, everything has been digital. I guess I'm playing on my PC a lot more these days, and you don't get physical PCs. My brain is more sort of receptive after, you know, buying a good few digital PC games. I'm like, all right, well, I'll just get this from a Switch.
My Switch sort of becoming like a little indie machine has turned into that as well, because most of those games don't have physical editions anyway, like unless like a certain, you know, publisher will pay extra.
It is really good, obviously, because it means it's cheaper to manufacture games. But for some reason, the digital ones are usually the same price, if not more. And it is obviously, you know, I'll bring back my Mother Earth chat, and it is obviously saving the planet.
Right, yeah.
So all these manufacturing, all these game boxes and discs, and that, you know,
you're not wrong. And plus, I mean, if you check out that, I just watched the Atari documentary, Atari Game Over, about the landfill and how they had to bury millions of copies of E.T.
I was going
to
say, was that an E.T. conspiracy?
Yeah. And it's just like, it's not a conspiracy, it's totally real.
Conspiracy!
It's not!
Conspiracy!
They dig it up, Ash Millman. It's a real thing. But I guess how that sort of translates into going forward, we have all these different conversations around like streaming services and digital ownership and like, you know, whether you would buy a movie on Amazon Prime knowing that you'll still have to be, you have to be subscribed to Amazon Prime to then access your digital collection. I think that this this generation, we've seen like, you know, EA is trying to do a streaming service called Project Atlas. Microsoft's doing xCloud. Like, there's a lot of that stuff. Where do you guys sit on that and the idea that, like, you know, digital, like, even ownership completely changes if you're suddenly just subscribed to a monthly service?
There's too many.
True.
Yeah,
very, very true.
You've like overwhelmed me there with all the different names. Yeah. Like, I was like,
that was only like two of like 10 that's coming.
I like digital as a concept, like being able to own things, but the streaming thing kind of worries me slightly about like where you sit and how things work.
What your stake in it is, like how much do you actually own?
It's pretty much a case of like you would have to pick one thing and stick to that one thing. And that kind of scares me. Like, obviously Xbox having Game Pass, like that is, Game Pass is for the Xbox.
Yes.
PlayStation, I suppose, I think
that's
had
PlayStation
one.
Now.
Was that good?
Well, it didn't used to be. It's way better now. Yeah.
And then PC, obviously, Steam and I suppose Epic. I don't know. But like, they're obviously, that's not streaming, so that's irrelevant. But
something like Google Stadia, like, it's weird because Google Stadia is like streaming only. You can't buy any game off that. So I think for me, like, the future, if they're going to stick with this stuff, is a hybrid of the two. It's like you can pay for a monthly thing, you can click on a game and it just works if your internet's strong enough. But you can also isolate a game and own it. But you need to be able to download it onto a system, not to just a service.
Games Pass, though, isn't it? Kinda. Like, it'd be like streaming version of Games Pass.
Like adding streaming to it.
Because Games Pass is great. Games Pass is the future. That's wonderful. Like, I love love that. I only
we're definitely not sponsored by Xbox, by the way. Just Game Pass is really good.
Yeah. I am. I know I'm not. I'm not. But no, if you want to sponsor me, Xbox, like, I'll take it. But no, the Games Pass is great. It's wonderful. I think that's a wonderful way of doing it, having all of these different titles that you can access instantly. Mm. If they made that into a streaming thing as well, I think that would be really good, because then there's still the choice to buy them and have them on your Xbox as your own thing.
It solves the installation time as well. Like if we get to a future where internet connections are stable enough and the infrastructure's there and you can just click on a game and play it. Mm. I like that. The thing that put me off, like when you had said all PlayStation Now, that did used to be streaming only and it was terrible. Because any remote lag, you feel it as like a gamer or someone. Like you're gonna pick up on even split seconds of difference.
I've been reminded of a conversation I think we were all having yesterday, and it was, how often do you replay a game?
Right.
What is the importance of actually owning a game, owning a digital license? Is there as much of an importance on it these days? There's so many games out there, and they're all so big and long. And
it's true.
It's like, how often do you think, when you're buying something, I'm buying this for life, I'm going to replay this?
That's
you know
the
what
thing.
I mean? Like, see, Ash, you're playing Horizon at the minute.
Yeah.
So you own that?
No. I'm borrowing it from Jules.
But assuming that you would go through it once and you'd be done.
But you're happy borrowing it.
Yeah.
See, this is perfect. You're borrowing it because you know, like, this is fine. I don't need to own this. I'm going to play through it once and then be done. Mm-hmm. So the thought of, like, streaming services, like, as opposed to owning a digital ownership, it's maybe not as bad.
Maybe ownership's overrated. Maybe I don't know if I'm there yet, but I totally see the argument for it. Because, like, for the vast majority, you do play through something once. I think obviously our careers have a lot to do with it, because we do want to just get through stuff and play it. But, like, it does reflect like a wider drowning in these games. But also, like, obviously there's an industry reality to it, where like so many games want to be a games as a service, and they want you to only play them for like years at a time. You know, like monthly DLC and different daily updates and different goals and stuff. I guess with that, that's another thing that sort of came out of this generation, is like, do you guys go back to any particular game like that much? Do you have any games as a service?
No, if I go back to Rage, if I go back to something, it's an old PS2 title that I can play through in 12 hours. Like, that's about it. Like,
I'll miss short games.
Yeah, I'll go and replay games that I know that I can get through, if you know what I mean. I love a short game that I can play again and get like the whole feeling and emotion from that again. A really long one, really don't go back to them. Right. Like an open world game, I'm just like, yeah, it was nice when I was there.
Because like, they are so like ludicrously long. Like, I haven't gone back through all of Skyrim. I've restarted Skyrim a bunch, but I've never got through the entire quest again. Rich, what were you going to say? You did a little face.
Dark Souls. actually, more recently for me, it has been Diablo 3. I realized, like, I literally, every time there's a new season in that game, I get back into that game. I play it for another, like, 30, 40 hours.
Because they
like,
almost missed the trick not making Souls a season game. Like, I don't want that. But, like, you play it enough, or the fandom does, where if they did release, like, I don't know, new challenge maps or something, like what Bloodborne tried to do in terms of the underground stuff. Because Diablo, like you said, has seasons. Rocket League has seasons. Like, a lot of these games have, like, reasons to come back more than just replaying something.
Yeah, they have new challenges every 6 months or so. And just like a lot of my friends are playing it at the minute, and it's like we almost like get back into it once a year.
That's what they want you to. So many publishers have jumped on that, and then nearly every big game has like the season, the roadmap or the season pass or like, whatever.
I don't understand how it's beneficial to Blizzard, like, because they keep obviously putting work into Diablo. We've already bought it. Although the thing is, though, me saying to my friends, oh, I'm playing Diablo again, has made all them buy Diablo. So of course they're then.
True. I haven't played Diablo in a while, but does that have any microtransaction type stuff?
Like not anymore. Obviously, good. I did at launch, but it had the real world auction house mind.
I did, which I kind of got rid of. But I guess we can like touch on that stuff too. Like, the obviously microtransactions, loot boxes, they really came to the fore in this generation. Going forward, like, I don't think they'll go away. They make way too much money.
Yeah, yeah.
But where are you guys on that stuff? What?
I don't know. They might go away because they're being banned by
the
legalized law.
Yeah.
If I think once they're in a, I think loot boxes, if they get like turned into like daily treasure boxes, like that sort of thing, where you can have like a free one and then you can open a limited amount a day that you can purchase, I think that's a fine way of having them in. I don't like it. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think they should really be in there.
The fact that we've had to get to a stage where you need to put a cap on how many you can buy a
day. Or legalize like the reality of, you know, because it is a gambling philosophy and mentality. Like, you're spinning a wheel to see what you get, and like that's the thing that'll get clamped down on. But I think the actual idea of recurrent spending methods won't go away. They just make too much money.
Yeah.
I mean, even Mario Kart 2 made $1 million in 24 hours.
Oh my God.
It's just, which apparently is, that was actually like nothing compared to, I think Pokemon Go made like 80 million, and it's just like.
Yeah, see, Pokemon wasn't random. That was the thing. You knew what you were buying. You were buying something and you were getting it. Mm-hmm. Like, you wanted balls, you got balls.
Obviously, you guys have bought Pokemon balls. I know you have.
Oh yeah.
So many.
Too many.
Well, so, okay,
and incubators and all. So honestly, I used to get like the packs. So like, I was a bit hooked on the Pokemon thing, and then I had to.
Do you like the gift boxes that had loads of different stuff in them?
Oh, that's a loot box. a loot box.
No, but you knew what was in it.
That's the difference. That's the thing. Like, going forward, do you think that the difference will be that they just spell out what you're going to get?
Oh, absolutely.
And is that the solution to it?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. See, I play a lot of this Kingdom Hearts game on mobile, and I love it so much. And I don't actually spend that much money on it, but now and then I do because they work on it tons. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people who are employed to make content for this game. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind every few months giving them a tenner. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know what? If you count up how much money I've spent on this game, it's more than I spent on Kingdom Hearts 3.
Right.
That way. But the thing is, I just like supporting people who making a game that I really like.
Yeah, I think it makes... this is where I can get on board with it in terms of a recurrent spending method, because gaming is different to movies and TV and whatever. Maybe, I guess, less so TV in terms of something rolling out over time. But, like, if there are employees and, you know, putting stuff out and, you know, supporting a game and supporting a fandom, mm-hmm. I don't have a problem putting money into that conversation. Like, I'm happy for that to keep going forward. It's the randomization side of it that always annoys me.
that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, this game is... It's got sort of, like, blind boxes in it.
Rage!
I love it, though!
It's
so exciting though when I get a real one and it's really shiny and it's really
surprise
good. That's
mechanics.
How they get you. That's
I know
how they get
got you.
Ash, they got me.
What is more rewarding though? Seeing the lovely shiny rare thing at like the top of like the expense pile. We have to earn all of your experience points to spend them and get it. And you've done that yourself in the game. You've built yourself up and you're all these levels high and you can finally get the rare shiny and own it and know that it is yours. Or just getting it for free just because you buy a tenner for it.
Well,
it's not free, it's a tenner.
As you say, the industry would say paying the money, apparently.
I mean, free experience-wise. For free, the time and effort is free.
The thing is, though, that this is a separate thing, so I'm going to go into genres from this generation, but that justification is totally what you need to get into the Souls series or the Sekiro and earning it and getting there and overcoming the challenge.
Yeah, but when it's just the basic gameplay to get through.
When you get there.
To talk about Souls very briefly, a basic gameplay that is accessible, you can enjoy, there's different levels to it, and then a really high one that you can also try and get to as well if you have the panache to do so. God of War did it perfectly because you had the whole world that you could do all the open world exploring, and then there was the Valkyries, which was the Dark Souls version of that, and I was invested in that and did that because I was like, hey, I can access all of this game and really enjoy it and then also have the really tough grind bit as well. There we go, all my points.
As opposed to starting on the top of a mountain and then trying to make it even higher.
Yeah, just literally across the mountain. Like, it's not even getting higher. It's just all one grindy level with the snow hitting you in your eyes and all sorts.
So I guess to round off the monetization thing, I guess, like, the amount of money that's made through recurrent spending methods and all that, it is an astronomical amount of money. And they just people seem to like it. I think it is just the randomization thing that I think will go away through legality.
Yes.
Just because it is obviously a gambling mentality.
Oh, it's bad. I agree it's bad. I enjoy it and I still know it's bad.
Yeah.
I do really think though games that have the option to either spend time or money, it's good giving people the choice, but when you don't have a choice, like a lot of mobile games, it's a problem.
I think it's weird. This is a way wider conversation, but I think it's weird that they like the companies, the developers, the publishers are the ones saying, we're going to give you a 200-hour game. Oh, but you can pay to make it shorter. And it's like, well, you imposed that in the first place. We didn't ask you for this labyrinthine, over-the-top, bloated thing that we then have to pay to make it palatable. That stuff annoys me, but that's kind of like a separate thing. In terms of genres, I was going to just run down some genres that have emerged sort of this generation. There's not that many, mainly because... at this stage in gaming, the vast majority of genres are quite solid.
Nothing's original these days, is it?
Hardly anything, unless you want to wee on some mushrooms and do a Death Stranding, because that's apparently going to be a Strand game if you want a new thing. So give it some time. But in terms of stuff that we got from this generation, I highlighted Walking Sims, because although Gone Home and Amnesia sort of set the ball rolling, loads of first-person exploration games came out at the start of this generation. What did you guys think of those? Because they've sort of petered out a bit. I love them too. Do you want more going forward?
Yeah, I like a good Walking Sim. I like a good walk. I like an enjoyable little roam and finding some stuff.
Sometimes in a world where you're playing tons of Dark Souls and Sekiro and stuff like that, you just need a good Gone Home. You need a good Abzu. Have you played Abzu?
I wouldn't say Abzu is a walking sim, right?
It's a swimming sim.
It is a swimming sim. It's so lush. If you play that on pro, it generates more squids. It puts more stuff in the background. If you want more schools of fish, you play it on the pro. I'm just letting you know. It's good. I like gravitate a lot to this genre because I think it's one of the only ways to do like a just a very straightforward thing.
Games.
Yeah. And it's like, it never really got like a label. Like, it was just kind of, a walking sim. But that always felt a little bit derivative.
Yeah.
Or a little bit sort of like,
it sounds really dumb, right?
Yeah, or like slightly insulting, but it's like kind of what we refer to them as.
Whenever we say walking sim, I always think like Goat Simulator. I always think it's like Walk Simulator. Like, I'm always
actually,
like,
Goose Game's kind of a walking sim.
Yeah, it's
a honking sim.
It's a waddle sim, but it's a good time. Next thing down is the whole Souls influence, which we don't have a defined name for that genre, but it's like Souls-like or, you know, even just like so Souls games, but there's so many, like the Surge Code Vein just came out. There are identifiable elements in that genre. So is the Surge too. But what do you guys think of that? I think that's the, other than the next one I'm going to say, I think the Souls genre, the Souls series is the biggest new thing this generation.
I think, this is, goes against everything I've just said.
Because here
I,
she
is. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing that we have this as a new genre and something people can engage with. Mm-hmm. And it offers lots of things that don't appeal to me, but that appeals to a lot of other gamers. And it's great for that. Mm-hmm. And also, I really like it because it means that people react to it and make nice, easy, like walking easy sim things. Game. Yeah, no, you get, you see people.
Yin and yang.
Exactly. People, you get the hard, horrible stuff of the Souls games and you get people react. Well, I find
grueling,
it arduous. And then you get the people reacting to it with nicer games, indie games, smaller games that are just like little bite-sized things around it, like these big releases that are really tough and take up loads of time. And I like picking up all the little crumbs around the edges rather than the big one in the middle.
Stop being so heck and cute.
To be fair, the all the stuff that the Souls DM sort of like set forward, like the control schemes, the way that the enemies are laid out, the sort of level of challenge or whatever, nearly every third-person action game plays like that now, even to the point where something like Ubisoft's For Honor is kind of like that. There was a big main Assassin's Creed, borrowed the same Origins, control mechanics. Yeah. And like those ones are easier versions of that gameplay loop. I think that's become like one of the most influential things.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel, it's defined your life.
If we want to, Dark Souls did change my life. And I'm not just saying this because I made a video about it on What Culture Gaming last year. It did. It's completely changed how I view video gaming. And there's nothing that I can't do. And that feeling is incredible to have that. Like, it's something that you can translate into real life as well. Like, I feel that way in real life. There's nothing I can't do.
I think of it in terms of like it's weird because it's that thing of like if Rocky getting up the stairs. It's like if you can get through a Souls game, if there's any other thing that comes up in front of you, most of the time you've had to steel yourself to get through a Souls game that you can kind of get through it. Yeah. It is weird because it's just a game, but it does translate over because you do have to sort of like fight your own mentality to get through it.
It's a mindset. I don't know. I respect it. I respect it. Not for me, but I respect
it. Totally. Yeah. And it's
I absolutely know. I take it way too seriously.
You're a Souls fan. It's what we do. But I guess off the top of our heads, or like our collective heads, me and you, Rach, what is the easiest Souls game? Because if you were going to just give...
Lords of the Fallen.
Maybe Lords of the Fallen. Yeah, the Surge is pretty easy, actually.
Code Vein is easy in the way that it's a co-op game. Mm-hmm. Lords of the Fallen was very easy. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I was just good...
Hey, definitely a Souls fan.
There she is.
Actually, you mentioned God of War. The control scheme for that is very much Souls for the new one. And obviously over this generation, the term, Souls Light or whatever is kind of overused.
The thing is, though, I can hear a game. Someone can tell me, have you heard of about this new game, Blasphemous? It's a bit like Dark Souls. I'm like, say no more. Say no more. That's
I bought it right now.
The influence of Dark Souls, like you can say to someone, it's a Souls-like, or it's like Dark Souls, and they'll know instantly if they're going to like it or not. Mm-hmm. There's not many genres you can say that, because you could say, it's an RPG, and you go, tell me more.
Yeah,
or you could say, it's a platformer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially in third person stuff.
I think you guys mentioned like Metroidvania emerging as a genre, and that was obviously based on Metroid and
Castlevania.
So like those being, and knowing that if you like those two games or not, and that being a divisive thing, and Souls coming around as a Souls-like, I think it's good to draw the comparison.
I think there's like more refinement to come, but when people say something is a Metroidvania, it means the item-based progression, or you need a certain ability before you can get through this defined level gate or whatever. Souls-likes tend to be more like brutally hard difficulty or like a certain control scheme, but I think going forward that'll only become its own genre. It's been such a massive thing,
just that they both have like their own born from actual games names, and then you know if you like those games or not, like divisive. Totally. Like I feel like Metroidvania people either like or don't like them as well.
Let's end on the lovely thing that is Battle Royale.
Woo! God, how did we leave this to last? The defining feature of this generation, let's be honest.
Well, I don't know, right? Because it feels like it is, but even Call of Duty has had one and dropped it since they did it. Like Black Ops 4 had it on their blackout mode, and then the new Modern Warfare isn't getting a Battle Royale mode.
So it's a rise and fall thing.
I think it's a Fortnite thing.
Rise, though. Mm. Oh my god! Like,
that
you can't
rise was
deny,
insane.
Like how everywhere Battle Royale was for a time. I feel like it is on the way down now, especially like in 2019. But I feel like 2017, 2018, it was just everywhere.
Yeah, it feels like how Overwatch was sort of like the defining hero shooter, and then a lot of other game devs try to do hero based mechanics. Like Rainbow Six has the opposite. operators, and Call of Duty has its individuals and stuff. But like, for, if you're going to talk about hero shooters, Overwatch is way up and above everything else. And same in Battle Royale. Like, if people talk about Battle Royale, they're nearly always talking about Fortnite or PUBG. It's like the two sides of that coin. What did you guys think of the genre overall, though? Because for me, I ended up just thinking it's more of a mode than its own genre.
Ooh, I agree. I think that it's nice that it exists. Again, it's nice that it exists for people who enjoy it, like Fortnite being around. And the other one, what was the other one? Was it
PUBG?
That's it. Oh my God, I was going to say Battlefield. I got really lost for a moment. But yeah, PUBG and Fortnite existing for people who really enjoy that type of gameplay and who just want to thrive on co-op stuff. I feel like it's the same as the FIFAs and the sports games of the world. Like, it very much slots into that sort of gaming category where people who play COD online, all that sort of thing. Like, it very much suits them, and I'm glad it exists for them. But I don't want any more of it now. Please, I've had enough. Like,
there's enough things in development where I think we'll still get the residual effect of Fortnite being so huge. But at the same time, like I said, for me, Call of Duty not including it again was pretty indicative of that. Maybe they just didn't have that much success in Blackout. Yeah. But you played Battle Royale, right?
No, not at all. I played any of them. Can't stand it. I played Fortnite once. I played PUBG twice. It's, do you know what? Something like Apex Legends coming along and sort of changing the way that it works. I feel like Battle Royale as a genre is really good, like Ash is saying, for the people that love them. Yeah. But those people are not me.
It's more than fair. I think my thing with Battle Royale, I sort of snarkily put this on Twitter, that they are the real walking simulators. Because for the most part, you're just going from encounter.
They're so boring.
Yeah, it's like half an hour to leap and do something again. But I also know that there's an incredibly intense reality to playing those games too.
Yeah.
And it can work. It's kind of like a mix of survival mechanics and whatever.
I think for esports, great. And I also think for getting people into gaming who, it's very light and short and just a quick game. Like, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, then you don't. But also, like, you can have a little sample of that and then grow into maybe trying another game that you not really haven't thought about before. You know what I mean? I feel like it popularizes gaming and makes it cool.
Yes.
It makes it accessible to wider audiences. So it's good that it's there, but I feel like it's done its job.
I think going forward, it'll be a mode.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Like, Fortnite and obviously Minecraft and stuff like that, single-handedly probably got a lot of younger audiences into gaming. Totally. Yeah.
Which helps make gaming more mainstream, kind of helps go
forward. Which helps make it more money, which helps littler games get
all your loot boxes. They're everywhere.
Boxes, I guess.
Yeah, it's good. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below of the upcoming generation and the generation that was the Xbox One and the PS4. I was like, 360? It's not that thing. But yes, for now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
And Rachel Shackleton.
I will see you when I'm married.
She will. I will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.